The results of the American election are reverberating around the world, and we've been speaking with reporters to see how it's resonating where they are. Today, we head to Brazil and Mexico. NPR's Philip Reeves joins us from Rio de Janeiro. Hey, Phil.
Hi.
And Carrie Kahn joins us from Mexico City. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Tanya.
Let's start with you. You know, despite President Trump's rhetoric against Mexico, which we'll get into in just a moment, Mexico's president has actually thanked Trump for his kindness. What's the general reaction in Mexico to the U.S. election and Biden's win?
Well, not only does he thank him for his kindness, he has not recognized Biden as the president-elect. He says, in keeping with Mexico's long tradition of non-intervention in foreign affairs, he can't recognize a winner until election authorities certify the election. And he also likes to recall how he was, quote, robbed of an election here in 2006. But you have to keep in mind that, like you said, López Obrador and Trump have a publicly good working relationship, and that's despite all of Trump's browbeating of Mexicans, tariff threats, border wall threats, all that. He and Trump are close.
Right, right. I mean, in talking about that rhetoric, I mean, Trump has repeatedly blamed Mexico for allowing drugs to be shipped into the United States by trafficking groups. He famously said Mexico should pay for the wall, which, of course, did not happen. But beyond Trump's rhetoric, what effect have Trump's policies and threats actually had on Mexico and its relationship with the United States?
I think most importantly that Mexico and the region here has had to deal with two main aspects of the Trump administration. That's his unpredictability, his volatility, and his singular focus on immigration. You know, for Mexico, he did push an overhaul of NAFTA, but it wasn't a hugely different trade agreement. Some concessions were made on strengthening labor rights in Mexico, but singularly this, the administration, the Trump administration, has been focused on immigration. He's bullied Mexico into accepting asylum seekers to wait out their U.S. court proceedings in Mexico. He pushed Mexico to send troops to its southern and northern borders to keep migrants from getting to the U.S. And Trump has also pushed other Central American countries into immigration agreements that to accept migrants and crack down on migrant traffic. So, you know, this has been the singular focus here, and that's been mostly the relationship between the Trump administration, Mexico, and Central America.
Something else really interesting is Joe Biden's experience dealing with Mexico and the region. He has quite a bit. Talk about that and what Mexico and Central Americans can expect from a Biden presidency.
Biden is very familiar with the issues in the region. You know, he was Obama's point person for Central America, especially after in 2014, if you remember, there was a surge in unaccompanied minors that came to the southern border. So Biden was very focused on improving the economic and the social issues that are in Central America, in Mexico, that pushes the migration to the U.S. He was very focused on anti-corruption issues, especially in Guatemala and Honduras. He also will most likely focus on climate change and labor rights under the new trade pact that was signed between Mexico and Canada and the U.S. But Biden will also have a more measured, policy toward the region, not singularly focused just on immigration. And that's something that corrupt elites and leaders in this region are not going to like. But he also, you know, early on, I believe he's going to have to face increased migration out of the region. These economies, especially in Central America and Mexico, are taking a huge hit due to the pandemic. And now we have this devastating hurricane damage. We had a hurricane less than 2 weeks ago, and another one, Category 5, is headed to the same part of the region. And that's going to be a major contributor of migration to the U.S. and pretty early on in the Biden administration.
Okay, let's bring in Philip Reeves in Rio. Phil, President Trump and Brazil's President Bolsonaro have been compared to each other. They're both populist. They didn't want to wear masks during the pandemic. On the surface, it seems like there has been a better relationship between Brazil and the U.S. than there was between the U.S. and Mexico early on under President Trump. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, it's no coincidence that Bolsonaro is the only leader in South America who's yet to congratulate Biden or to recognize him as president-elect. Even Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, who's not exactly a friend of the United States, has done so. Bolsonaro's, you know, he's never made any secret that he's a huge admirer of Trump. He considers him an ideological soulmate. Trump's baseless claims of fraud and conspiracy resonate with Bolsonaro's favorite themes that he uses to fire up his base here in Brazil, which is very familiar stuff, that the mainstream media is all fake news and that the institutions of democracy, Congress and the judiciary are undermining the will of the people, and that political opponents of this kind of far-right populism are socialists or communists.
Hmm. Trump and Bolsonaro, ideological soulmates. What a description. What does the government there expect from a Biden presidency?
Well, one thing we know, that Biden is likely to take a far harder line on the Amazon rainforest. He wants to hold Bolsonaro to account for the growing amount, the very alarming amount of destruction that's been happening there on Bolsonaro's watch. Biden made that abundantly clear in the first presidential TV debate. He talked about setting up a fund to help Brazil protect the forest, but also imposing sanctions if deforestation continues unchecked. And that infuriated Bolsonaro. He called it lamentable. He went on a rant on Twitter. We don't know, though, whether Biden can get Bolsonaro to change tack. I mean, Bolsonaro has already been under a lot of pressure from Europe, from big business here in Brazil and internationally, from big guns in the media over this issue. But he hasn't budged from his central position, which is that the Amazon is a sovereign issue and that outsiders should butt out.
Where has Trump stood on this, and what effect has the Trump administration policies had on Brazil?
Well, Trump has put very little pressure on Bolsonaro of any kind, but he has fundamentally shifted Brazil's foreign policy. Brazil's traditionally been friendly to Washington, but especially when the left was in power here, somewhat aloof, not least because of the U.S.'s unhappy history of intervention in the region. Bolsonaro just changed all that, and commentators here are now saying that Bolsonaro has given Trump a lot more love than he ever got back, and that he hasn't gained all that much from the relationship in terms of, say, better trade terms, and that with Trump gone, Bolsonaro's now isolated, a far-right, tub-thumping populist sitting in a region that, if you look at Argentina, Bolivia, even Chile, seems to be tilting to the left again.
Carrie, bringing you back in here, of course, as we know, the pandemic is a huge problem, no matter who our American president is. Nearly 100,000 people have died from COVID-19 in Mexico. You kind of alluded to this when you talked about migration going to be a huge issue moving forward, the coronavirus having a big play in that. But how would you characterize the impact coronavirus is having in Mexico right now?
Well, it's devastating. Mexico just passed the 1 million mark of confirmed cases of COVID, and as you said, nearly 100,000 people have died, and that's all with very little testing in the country. Less than 2% of the population has been tested. You only get a test here in Mexico if you're seriously ill and hospitalized, so the numbers are much higher. New restrictions have just been put in place in Mexico City for the next 2 weeks because cases have spiked, and you can't really call this rise in cases a second wave because the first wave never really decreased. So the president continues to downplay the virus. He doesn't wear a mask, and his point person on coronavirus here says testing is a waste of time, a waste of resources. So they're really depending on a vaccine coming soon, and they have an aggressive policy to try and get one. But there are no lockdowns. There are no mandatory closures. The president here values economic opening over the health situation, and due to the high informal economy here. So we're just going to have to see. It doesn't sound like there's any abating of the coronavirus situation here in the near future.
In the near future. Phil, Brazil's COVID-19 death toll is second only to the U.S., more than 160,000 deaths and 5 million infections. Those numbers are really, really horrible. Does it feel that way there?
Yes. And no, I mean, here in Rio de Janeiro, I went out to have a look around on Saturday evening. I went to the Sugarloaf Mountain, which is near where I'm sitting now. There was a big crowd in front of the beach. There was beer, there were food stalls, there was a live band. People were singing along without masks. The Brazilians very often do that. They like to join in music. And this kind of behavior really is common not only all over this city, but across Brazil. Yet if you talk to Brazilians about what the pandemic's doing to their lives, you hear a lot of very sad stories about lost income, lost jobs, their concerns for friends and relatives who've got sick. And I'm also hearing a resurgence of official concern about the stress that's being put on hospitals in some areas, and about, in particular, their fears of a second wave.
That's NPR's Philip Reeves in Rio. We've also been speaking with NPR's Carrie Kahn in Mexico City. Thanks to you both.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.